Science of Mind Healing. The rule of divinity is golden. To be wise and true rejoices every heart. But evil influences waver the scales of justice and mercy. No personal considerations should allow any root of bitterness to spring up between Christian Scientists, nor cause any misapprehension as to the motives of others. We must love our enemies and continue to do so unto the end. By the love of God, we can cancel error in our own hearts and blot it out of others. Sooner or later, the eyes of sinful mortals must be opened to see every error they possess and the way out of it, and they will flee as a bird to your mountain, away from the enemy of sinning sense, stubborn will, and every imperfection in the land of Sodom, and find rescue and refuge in truth and love. Every loving sacrifice for the good of others is known to God, and the wrath of man cannot hide it from him. God has appointed for Christian Scientists high tasks and will not release them from the strict performance of each one of them. The students must now fight their own battles. I recommend that scientists draw no lines whatever between one person and another, but think, speak, teach, and write the truth of Christian Science without reference to right or wrong personality in this field of labor. Leave the distinctions of individual character and the discriminations and guidance thereof to the Father, whose wisdom is unerring and whose love is universal. We should endeavor to be long-suffering, faithful, and charitable with all. To this small effort, let us add one more privilege, namely, silence whenever it can substitute censure. Avoid voicing error, but utter the truth of God and the beauty of holiness, the joy of love, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding, recommending to all men fellowship in the bonds of Christ. Advise students to rebuke each other always in love, as I have rebuked them. Having discharged this duty, counsel each other to work out his own salvation without fear or doubt, knowing that God will make the wrath of man to praise him, and that the remainder thereof he will restrain. We can rejoice that every germ of goodness will at last struggle into freedom and greatness, and every sin will so punish itself that it will bow down to the commandments of Christ, truth, and love. I enjoin it upon my students to hold no controversy or enmity over doctrines and traditions, or over the misconceptions of Christian Science, but to work, watch, and pray for the amelioration of sin, sickness, and death. If one be found who is too blind for instruction, no longer cast your pearls before this state of mortal mind, lest it turn and rend you, but quietly, with benediction and hope, let the unwise pass by, while you walk on in equanimity, and with increased power, patience, and understanding gained from your forbearance. This counsel is not new, as my Christian students can testify, and if it had been heeded in times past, it would have prevented, to a great extent, the factions which have sprung up among scientists to the hindrance of the cause of truth. It is true that the mistakes, prejudices, and errors of one class of thinkers must not be introduced or established among another class, who are clearer and more conscientious in their convictions. But this one thing can be done and should be: let your opponents alone and use no influence to prevent their legitimate action from their own standpoint of experience, knowing as you should that God will well regenerate and separate wisely and finally, whereas you may err in effort and lose your fruition. Hoping to pacify repeated complaints and murmurings against too great leniency on my part towards some of my students who fall into error, I have opposed occasionally and strongly, especially in the first edition of this little work, existing wrongs of the nature referred to. But I now point steadfastly to the power of grace to overcome evil with good. God will furnish a table in the wilderness and show the power of love. Science is not the shibboleth of a sect or the Kabbalistic insignia of philosophy. It excludes all error and includes all truth. More mistakes are made in its name than this period comprehends. Divinely defined, science is the atmosphere of God, humanly construed, and according to Webster, it is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general truths and principles on which it is founded and from which it is derived. I employ this awe-filled word in both a divine and human sense, but I insist that Christian science is demonstrably as true relative to the unseen verities of being as any proof that can be given of the completeness of science. The two largest words in the vocabulary of thought are Christian and science. The former is the highest style of man. The latter reveals and interprets God and man. It aggregates, amplifies, unfolds, and expresses the all God. The life of Christ is the predicate and postulate of all that I teach, and there is but one standard statement, one rule, and one principle for all scientific truth. My hygienic system rests on mind, the eternal truth. What is termed matter, or relates to its so-called attributes, is a self-destroying error. When a so-called material sense is lost, and truth restores that lost sense, on the basis that all consciousness is mind and eternal, the former position that sense is organic and material is proven erroneous. The feasibility and immobility of Christian science unveil the true idea, namely, that earth's discords have not the reality of mind in the science of being, and this idea dematerializing and spiritualizing mortals turns like the needle to the pole all hope and faith to God, based as it is on his omnipotence and omnipresence. Eternal harmony, perpetuity, and perfection constitute the phenomena of being, governed by the immutable and eternal laws of God, whereas matter and human will, intellect, desire, and fear are not the creators, controllers, nor destroyers of life or its harmonies. Man has an immortal soul, a divine principle, and an eternal being. Man has perpetual individuality and God's laws, and their intelligent and harmonious action constitute his individuality in the science of soul. In its literary expression, my system of Christian metaphysics is hampered by material terms, which must be used to indicate thoughts that are to be understood metaphysically. As a science, this system is held back by the common ignorance of what it is and what it does, and worse still, by those who come falsely in its name. To be appreciated, science must be understood and conscientiously introduced. If the Bible and science and health had the place in schools of learning that physiology occupies, they would revolutionize and reform the world through the power of Christ. It is true that it requires more study to understand and demonstrate what these works teach than to learn theology, physiology, or physics, because they teach divine science with fixed principle, given rule, and unmistakable proof. Ancient and modern human philosophy are inadequate to grasp the principle of Christian science or to demonstrate it. Revelation shows this principle and will rescue reason from the thrall of error. Revelation must subdue the sophistry of intellect and spiritualize consciousness with the dictum and the demonstration of truth and love. Christian science mind healing can only be gained by working from a purely Christian standpoint. Then it heals the sick and exalts the race. The essence of this science is right thinking and right acting, leading us to see spirituality and to be spiritual, to understand and to demonstrate God. The Massachusetts Metaphysical College and Church of Christ Scientists in Boston were the outgrowth of the author's religious experience. After a lifetime of orthodoxy on the platform of doctrines, rites, and ceremonies, it became a sacred duty for her to impart to others this new old knowledge of God. The same affection, desire, and motives which have stimulated true Christianity in all ages and given impulse to goodness in or out of the church have nerved her purpose to build on the newborn conception of the Christ, as Jesus declared himself, namely, the way, the truth, and the life. Living a true life, casting out evil, healing the sick, and preaching the gospel of truth, these are the ends of Christianity. This divine way impels a spiritualization of thought and method beyond doctrine and ritual, and in nothing else has she departed from the old landmarks. The unveiled spiritual signification of the word so enlarges our sense of God that it makes both sense and soul, man and life, immaterial, though still individual. It removes all limits from divine power. God must be found all instead of a part of being, and man the reflection of his power and goodness. This science rebukes sin with its own nothingness, and thus destroys sin quickly and utterly. It makes disease unreal, and this heals it. The demonstration of moral and physical growth and a scientific deduction from the principle of all harmony declare both the principle and idea to be divine. If this be true, then death must be swallowed up in life and the prophecy of Jesus fulfilled. Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Though centuries passed after those words were originally uttered, before this reappearing of truth, and though the hiatus be longer still before that saying is demonstrated in life that knows no death, the declaration is nevertheless true and remains a clear and profound deduction from Christian science.